It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's 9 o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game Tonight as we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into the Kia Studios on a Tuesday evening here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Abe Gordon here hanging out with you. One more hour to go. And there's a lot of stuff I did not get to because the Atlanta Falcons discussion was pure and it was clean and it took up the better part of 90 minutes. We've got the college football playoff rankings out. We're going to talk about that a little bit more with John Bryce of footballscoop.com in about 15 minutes. We got some Braves news we'll get to at the end of the show as well. And I'll tell you what, I didn't even get to the Carson Beck and Georgia discussions. I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know if you can keep winning games. I don't know if you can win a national championship with the way that he is playing. And you got two choices. You either hope he cleans it up and plays better, or you try and make a quarterback change. And I think there's been plenty of options for Kirby Smart to make a change. He has been hesitant to do so. There is no doubt about that. Coming up at 10 o'clock, and Dom, just give me a thumbs up, thumbs down. We got Jason Longshore, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Following me, and obviously it's a big show for him coming off of the Atlanta United victory on Saturday night at the Benz. It was rocking. It was awesome. But look, they've got a winner-take-all deciding third game in this series against Inter Miami, the MLS single-season points record holder after what they did in the regular season this year. They got a game Saturday night to decide who will advance on, and so it'll be a big show for Jason. You're definitely going to want to stick around. I'm going to enjoy listening to that on my drive home. All right, we're already into it. Let's go ahead and get into this. I got a couple real discussions I want to get into, and we'll see how far we can get down the list. Let's talk about some of the top sports stories, topics, news that happen outside of Atlanta. A segment.
It's time for Outside the Perimeter on 92.9 The Game Tonight.
All right, Outside the Perimeter. And if you lived in Atlanta more than about 6 days, you probably understand why I titled it that. And so here we go. This one is, it's a couple days old. It's been developing, and then it took another turn today when the NBA made their announcement and ruling. But Joel Embiid shoved a journalist after an article that mentioned his deceased brother, the naming of his son, and essentially his desire and drive to play. And Embiid was suspended 3 games earlier today without pay for shoving that media member. The commentary from Joe Dumars on behalf of the NBA, quote, "While we understand Joel was offended by the personal nature of the original version of the reporter's column," which means there were changes, "interactions must remain professional on both sides and can never turn physical." Now, there's a couple ways to look at this, and I was talking with Oren Romain, who you hear with Dukes and Bell, and sometimes you'll hear him here with me tonight. I got Dom Cherovsky with me tonight, and he's doing, I mean, mostly a good job. He did certainly fire Outside the Perimeter a smidge early there, but that's all right. We'll look past it. There's no need for me to come in and shove you like Embiid did to Marcus over there. But it was an interesting situation because I looked at the article and I looked at the commentary, and you kind of ask yourself, in the individual moment, does this cross a line? And quite frankly, and I had discussions with Oren, and look, Oren has a son. I do not. That maybe that plays into a bit. I did not think the comments on their own crossed a line, and I'll explain why. I don't think it was private or privileged information. He was providing context to what was already public knowledge. Now, with that said, it was unnecessary. It did not add to the article. You don't lose anything out of the article if those lines are not in there. It was completely unnecessary. Did it cross the line? No. But it was completely unnecessary. He did not have to add that in. Now, the other aspect of it, well, there's a couple other aspects. Joel Embiid and this journalist, columnist, whatever you want to call him, they clearly have a history. Embiid had mentioned that already, saying it's not the first time. And so they have a history. No problem there. But Embiid also went on to say later during the availability, media availability, that he doesn't listen to or care or read what the media members write. In which case, and this is what led to the pushing and shoving, Marcus said that's clearly not true. And that's when the pushing and shoving had started. Now, before all this, Marcus had offered an apology. Joel Embiid did not accept it. And that's when it came out that they have a little bit more history than maybe you would certainly like to have. I think that the basis of the article is fair, right? Joel Embiid has openly talked about wanting to leave a legacy that his son can be proud of. The columnist is questioning that legacy and questioning his desire and drive to play. I understand that aspect of it, too. Fans are fed up that this is a potential MVP and we still haven't seen him make his debut this year. I get it. Again, I don't know if it crossed the line, but talking about the naming of your son in legacy and of your fallen brother doesn't add anything to the article. There's no commentary that would be missed without that. And so while I think it's an unnecessary sentence, I don't know if it crossed the line. And look, it didn't cross the line initially, right? Like, it's not like Embiid read it and immediately ran to this guy and be like, yo, what's up, and pushed him. There was back and forth between the two. Down the road, he pushed and shoved him. And so there was time between the article. There was discussion between the article. There was commentary and conversation between the article and the incident. So it didn't cross the line on its own. It was further comebacks from the journalist that was the real problem. And when Joel Embiid said, I don't pay attention to what you guys are writing anyways, and this guy, knowing he's already kind of in hot water with Embiid, says, apparently you do, you're asking for it. You're asking for it. Now, that being said, the NBA has to respond. They can't just let incidents turn physical and there be altercations anytime you think a media member went over the line. And this is where it's a real problem. What crosses the line? It's not fair for the NBA to decide what crosses the line, and I don't really think it's fair for the columnist to say, I thought it crossed the line or I didn't. I don't really think it's fair for Joel Embiid to say, well, this was my line and you crossed it. There really is no defined way too far. It's kind of like that other thing. You know it when you see it, right? Like, I think there's a basis of everyone agrees it went too far. I don't think we reached that level here. Dom, you've heard what I've had to say. You followed the story a little bit. I didn't think it crossed the line. It was absolutely, completely, unequivocally unnecessary.
Right.
But so, and it's public knowledge. It wasn't private or privileged conversation
right.
He shared.
Right, but I think the issue that
I
have
Will Smith,
with it.
You know, keep my name out your mouth. Keep my family's name out your mouth.
Exactly.
Part of it.
And it's the whole point of you didn't need to bring up sensitive information to make your point, so you're doing it intentionally to antagonize me.
That's correct. Out of for whatever spite or relationship they have. Yeah.
And to me, as a journalist, you crossed the line because the story is never supposed to be about you. Take your feelings out of it. Present the facts. That's all you need to do.
The other aspect of this is if you're Embiid, you have to know that it was meant to dig,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, you have
absolutely
to know it was meant. Like, I don't know who this columnist is. I've never read his stuff. I know who he is now. There's a lot of people who write things, headline things. Well, a lot of editors headline things. That's its own problem. Headlines not being their writer stuff. But anyways, this was designed. It was essentially verbal clickbait. Like, it's the best thing that can happen to this guy. Because I'd never heard of him. Now we know who he is, and people are reading his articles, and it got how many clicks to see what exactly he wrote?
Now people are going to look at other stuff that he's wrote. And
well, you got to follow every...
Yeah,
every
I got to see everything.
Every
now.
Mention yep. of Embiid now comes with, did he give him a little jab? What's going on here? And so there's part of that from the columnist that Embiid needs to not play into. That being said, I do get why it's tough for Embiid to just, quote, let it go or let it slide. I understand why he didn't accept the apology. But he's also got to know, all right, one more wisecrack can't be what puts you over the edge to a physical altercation. And that's part of the issue as well. And look, the further conversation with Embiid is he is bothered by the conversation of him not playing. And that's not about him not reading. That's about whether or not he's sensitive. And he's got thick enough skin to deal with the conversation that I think is a fair conversation. And I'm no longer talking about the brother and the naming and the legacy. It's a fair conversation to talk about Joel Embiid's ability to stay on the court. And he can no longer deny that that bothers him, that that's not a sensitive and sore subject for him. All right. That's where we got. I didn't even get to look. We got a lot of this to carry over. We'll do it at 9:40. We got the Jason Kelce situation. We got a quarterback controversy in Dallas, or at least I'm going to try and start one. We'll see how far that goes. But coming up next, we got the college football playoff rankings. The first edition, the committee, they met, they seeded, they ranked. Let's talk about it and a couple other stories with John Bryce of footballscoop.com. That's coming up in 5 minutes on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's hiding somewhere in the darkness waiting for nightfall.
It's live sports talk in the ATL at night. This is 92.9 The Game Tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in 92.9 The Game Tonight. You could almost play that last rejoiner at the end of Dukes and Bell. You hit daylight savings time. It's dark about 5:38 in this city. It's bright and early, though, nice and early, and I appreciate that because I get up early and take the dog for a run or a walk or whatever we're doing. That's neither here nor there. It's a big night. A lot of firsts happening tonight, and of course, I'm talking about the first debut edition of the 12-team college football playoff ranking and seeding. It's been a very interesting format to see that they both ranked the teams but also seeded them, and the seedings are much different than the rankings for a couple of different teams. And joining me now to talk about it is John Bryce, the footballscoop.com national football columnist with those guys. John, I spoke to you a couple of months ago. It's been a wild, weird season already and feels like we're just getting going now that the first rankings are out. How you doing this evening, man?
I'm good, Abe. How about you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I was interested in the format. I didn't know if they were just going to seed them or ranked them without seeding. They actually gave us both. We had seedings and rankings of note here for Georgia fans. While Georgia is seeded too, they are actually behind Ohio State in the rankings, according to the College Football Playoff Committee. And the interesting one was BYU, who gets the number 4 seed and automatic first round bye, was ranked number 9 in the actual rankings, not seedings. Just in general, John, what were your first impressions from how things went tonight and how teams were set up?
Yeah, I think that Penn State is grotesquely overrated. I think that the Boise State BYU situation is certainly very compelling. And I think that Georgia should be the number 2 team. And honestly, I would pick Georgia much more comfortably against Ohio State in a head-to-head than I would feel picking Oregon over Miami in a head-to-head, and that's just being completely candid with you.
Well, let's talk about Georgia then real quick, because there's obviously some concerns. Now, they're winning games and doing what they got to do, and they got a big one against a top 20 team on the road against Ole Miss this weekend, but Carson Beck, man, like another three interceptions against Florida, and he's had a bunch of multiple interception games already this year, including a couple of them that have been three interceptions. What do you see is going on with Carson Beck in the Georgia offense, and can they still win a national championship if he doesn't play much cleaner brand of football?
Well, he's got to play a much cleaner brand of football. Look, this is a guy that a year ago had a 4-1 TD to INT ratio, and this year it's barely 2-1. And that's significant, especially for a Georgia team that has a lesser margin of error, in my opinion, than it did a year ago. Georgia does not have the guys that scare you on the perimeter the way that an Ohio State does. I just think that otherwise Georgia is a better football team than Ohio State. But I think that Carson Beck absolutely has to play much better. I will say, and I might have said it on your show back in August or whenever, I felt going into the year that Carson Beck was a little bit overrated. I just hadn't seen enough from him to call him the definitively best quarterback in college football, as some people had done, and projected him as potentially the number one quarterback selected in the 25 NFL draft. I didn't feel either one of those things. He's a very good college football quarterback, but this year with lesser talent around him, he has not elevated his offense the way that he's needed to. Having said all that, you don't bet against Kirby in massive games where he can motivate his team the way that he prefers to motivate his team. And we've seen it all through the years. If Georgia is doubted, or if Georgia is some sort of slight underdog, Kirby Smart is really, really elite at motivating his team. He had no problem reminding everyone of that a few weeks ago at Texas. And it would be the same scenario in any sort of playoff game if it was a Georgia-Ohio State or Georgia-Oregon.
John, I was in section 434 of Everbank Stadium for Florida-Georgia this past weekend. But I am an Indiana alum, and I was keeping an eye on it. And you look early on, and they go down 10-0. They run 47 straight. They don't let Michigan State score again. They've been doing this on offense all year long. Defensively, though, the past couple of weeks, they've really ramped it up, starting, I guess, maybe with that game against Nebraska. What do you see out of this Indiana team? And do you think they can compete not just with a Michigan coming up on their schedule, but really with the big boys at the top?
Well, first of all, Abe, my wife also is an IU grad, so
yeah.
He would, disown me if I didn't give a Hoosiers to you. But I think IU can compete with most teams in this college football playoff ranking. I would not like IU against Oregon or Georgia. We'll find out soon enough against Ohio State. I wouldn't pick IU to be within 10 points of a Texas. But I think IU has much more substance to it than Penn State. It's hard for me to overstate how disappointed I am that Penn State is your number six team in tonight's rankings. I just think, look, if Minnesota doesn't notch a couple more wins and find a way to be ranked when they host Penn State to end the season, Penn State's going to have the worst 11-1 record that I can remember in a really, really long time, maybe ever, because we haven't had 12-game schedules for only about two decades. They could be 11-1 without a single win against a ranked opponent. Now, look, I know USC has talent, and USC wasn't completely off the cliff in the Pacific Ocean at the time that Penn State went out there and rallied back to win that game in overtime. But that's a very mid USC team, and that's frankly Penn State's best win to this point, in my opinion.
John Bryce of FootballScoop.com joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline on the night in which the debut edition of the college football playoff rankings, the committee doing their job, and it was a different job this year. Had to do it for 12 teams. You get the seedings. I'm kind of with you on Penn State. I had them at 8, not at 6. I still had them above Tennessee, Boise State, Bama, and Notre Dame. I think you're starting to get down to it where, quite frankly, and I know people want to argue all these teams have chances, that some of these teams just aren't, like, that good. They're not bad, but they're not really that good. You know, I don't think Notre Dame, in my opinion, is threatening to win a national championship this year, but someone's got to be in the top 12, and they found their way in there. One of the things that we had, John, was a real shift last week because of results. And it looked for me like for a while, there was real potential for the ACC and the Big 12 to get multiple teams in. And this was a world in which Clemson and Miami meet in the ACC title game and BYU and Iowa State meet in the Big 12 title game. And things are a little bit different now. Is there still a path for either of those conferences to get two teams into the top 12?
You know, Abe, I couldn't agree more, and I said the same thing a week ago, that suddenly out of almost nowhere, it was trending at the time. Like, if we had done this visit a week ago tonight, then I would have said the ACC and the Big 12 both were trending toward two teams apiece. And now I think there might still be a path for the ACC if the SMU handles business the rest of the way and, say, an 11-1 SMU faces a 12-0 Miami in the ACC championship, and SMU's only loss at that point in time would be to a presumptive Big 12 champion BYU, then I could see the ACC getting both Miami and SMU into the 12-team playoff at that point in time. I have a hard time seeing the Big 12. I think they've got longer odds to get two teams in than I do the ACC. Just a really debilitating loss for that conference for Iowa State to lose to a Texas Tech team that had given up 60-something points to a Baylor team that has Dave Aranda fighting for his coaching life and a bunch of controversy surrounding the helmet and headset and walkie-talkie communications in that game, and the Big 12 investigating things there. So I think the Big 12 suffered the biggest loss of the weekend. I don't think that the ACC is out of the question from getting two teams in. And one final point I just want to make about Penn State, and I know I'm harping on it here, but Ward Manuel tonight said, well, we ranked Penn State there because their game with Ohio State, our number two team, was back and forth the whole time. What a crap statement that is, Abe. Ohio State led for the final 51 minutes in that game. That's not back and forth. Give me a break. Penn State didn't score an offensive touchdown at home for like the first time since 2000. That's not a back and forth game. Ohio State won that game despite Penn State having every significant tangible and intangible benefit going into it.
And if we're going to play that game, John, I recall a game earlier in the season by a team that's ranked, let's see, 12, that was actually back and forth, that was on the road, and that did feature some toss-ups in the final minutes. Of course, I'm referring to Boise State and Oregon. And I think that's certainly an argument you could make, is that you're playing recency bias of what was a good game recently, but I would say a better game much earlier at the start of the season.
Yeah, Boise State looked exponentially more competitive and competent from a big picture standpoint against Oregon than what Penn State ultimately looked in that game against Ohio State. And Boise State, mind you, was not at home for that contest. Boise State was supposed to be run out of the duck pond in that game. And instead, it was there the entire time, and it was standing toe-to-toe with Oregon the entire time. And again, Penn State had so many opportunities to win this game. My colleague Zach Barnett wrote about it at Football Scoop. If not this past weekend, then whenever for James Franklin at Penn State. And I've had a lot of people, multiple other colleagues of mine back in my Knoxville roots, say Penn State football and Tennessee basketball under James Franklin and Rick Barnes respectively are awfully similar, and it's hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, and the other thing, just to wrap it up on the Penn State thing, is I don't know how much I'm really sold on Ohio State right now. That game against, was it Nebraska the week before, where they really had to eke it out. They have not been dominant either, and so I'm still a little bit of jury's out on them too. John Price of FootballScoop.com, national columnist, college football, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Final question for you, John, and it has been back and forth, up and down. I don't really know where to go with it. How do you handicap the Heisman right now?
You know, I think it's probably Cam Ward and Ashton Jeanty, and I don't know that it's necessarily in that order. It's
it might be Ashton Jeanty and then Cam Ward. As of right now, Cam Ward is going to have more signature opportunities of a higher profile nature than what Ashton Jeanty will have. But to me, it's those two versus the field. I'm a little shocked that Shedeur Sanders hasn't gotten more consideration. Travis Hunter, I think, had he not been nicked up and dinged up and had to miss parts or all of a game, would be the guy. I think Travis Hunter is the single best player in college football this year. I would be surprised if he's not in New York City as a finalist, but I'm not sure he's going to have what I call as many opportunity contests down the stretch as what Cam Ward will have.
Yeah, and we're going to get a good look locally here at Cam Ward, Georgia Tech facing Miami, and Georgia Tech's past the, I would not say elite. And so Cam Ward's got an opportunity for another 400-plus and who knows how many touchdowns. So we'll keep an eye on that. John, as always, appreciate you joining me. Thanks again for the time and for the conversation.
I appreciate it, Abe. Give me some good news on the MLB hot stove for our Braves as we move forward the rest of the year.
Well, to be honest, that's what we're going to do actually in our next segment. I got a couple Braves nuggets that they're not good. They're not good nuggets. So you'll just have to tune in on the Odyssey app. But you might not want to based on where it's headed. But appreciate it as always, John. John Price. Of footballscoop.com. Thank you so much. Yeah, we got to talk about the Braves. There's a couple things going on right now. And again, you know, we were talking about it with Caleb Johnson, right? It's easy to bury the Braves and kind of get lost in the news cycle. I got some things I want to make sure you're aware of. That's all coming up. Plus, we'll get back into some of the stories I didn't get to in Outside the Perimeter. We got a lot to get to still. Again, heavy Falcons day, and understandably so. Nothing done at the deadline. And we'll see how that plays out over the course of the rest of the season. Coming back in about 5 minutes. Final segment. It's Abe Gordon on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. The Game. It's Abe Gordon here and me. The customary Dom Chorosky, Billy Joel choice of songs. My favorite artist. It's always tough to not sing, but then I'm like, I'm hosting a radio show. One, it's not karaoke. People probably don't want that. They didn't sign up for it. And then two, like, I have to talk sports.
Right.
Not just sing random Billy Joel songs. Matter of trust, that one. Sounded like a live version, too. We got some stories I didn't get to earlier in Outside the Perimeter, but I want to catch everyone up on the Atlanta Braves. And before I do that, actually, let me say this. Make sure you stick around after I sign off here a little bit before 10. Jason Longshore is coming with Atlanta Soccer tonight, and it's obviously a huge time, a huge moment, a huge show for Jason and for Atlanta United. And they're going to cover more than just Atlanta United, but as always, Atlanta United in the midst of a winner-take-all series with Inter Miami, the number one seed, and they've extended it to a third and deciding game. We're going to have coverage of that game for you on Saturday on Star 94, but Jason will be talking about that Atlanta Soccer tonight when he takes to the airwaves in just over 15 minutes. So make sure you don't tune it off after I sign you guys off. I'm going to hand you right to Jason. It'll be good little drive time for me to get home too as well. All right. So a couple things have happened with the Braves, some things today and some things in the past couple of days. The Braves declined the option of catcher Travis d'Arnaud. There's a couple possibilities, and look, we're looking for reasons all day long about the Atlanta Falcons. There's a couple things going on here. Would have been $8 million, and there's potential that they bring him back on a little bit cheaper platform. But there's also the idea that maybe they need that $8 million. And you might ask yourselves, a pretty good team, going to get a couple players back from injury and be ready to go. Why might they need that $8 million? Well, for one, for starters, one of your top relievers out of the bullpen, Joe Jimenez, is likely to miss the entire season. And that was a bit of a surprise. He had surgery to repair a knee. He's going to miss at least 8 months, as many as 12, which would be the entire baseball season in 2025. So maybe you need the $8 million to go find a little bit more in the bullpen. The other aspect of this is, in Alex Anthopoulos, we just found this out today, at least publicly for the first time, Alex Anthopoulos addressed the situation, you're not going to have Acuna or Strider on opening day. And he said it today. And for Acuna, it may not be until a month or two into the season. And Strider's timeline, who knows? I mean, look, the Braves could get, they could get interesting and maybe play with, all right, once he's, you know, measured up to three or four innings, we'll just bring him in. We can let him build his stamina at the major league level and use him as a de facto, you know, longer opener type thing, or they might really ramp him up in the minors and get to full output. It'll be interesting to see how they play that, but they're not going to have Acuna Jr. or Spencer Strider on opening day. And look, that's probably not a huge surprise, but it's at least the first time they've addressed it and mentioned that publicly. And look, some people thought they would be back. They thought the injuries did occur early enough that you, especially with Strider, that maybe you would, but not the case, at least not unless something miraculous happens with the timelines there. So Joe Jimenez out the entire year. Strider and Acuna not returning as early as maybe expected. And there's potential for Travis d'Arnaud to return, but there's potential not. You have Drake Baldwin in the minors. It'd be a little bit more of a fast track than the Braves are probably comfortable with behind Sean Murphy, but we'll see how it plays out. I think the best-case scenario in regards to d'Arnaud is he hits free agency and you can bring him back on a slightly lower deal. I don't pretend to know the number, nor am I going to attack this man's paycheck. But you probably only need 1 year from him. Drake Baldwin should be ready by next year. I don't know if he's ready just yet. And so we'll see how they play that one out. All right, back to a couple of other stories. And again, thank you for listening tonight. It's been a fun show here on 92.9 The Game. We got going at 7 p.m. and it was all over hot and heavy with the Atlanta Falcons, not doing anything at the NFL trade deadline. I mean, I wouldn't say I've calmed down at all, but I'm not yelling anymore. I guess that's something. Maybe that's because you guys aren't yelling right now either. But look, we all wanted the Falcons to do something, and they didn't. And it's frustrating because feels like a team that's in position to do something special in the postseason. You're 6-3. You're first in the division. You got a bunch of tiebreakers in the NFC South and in the NFC. You're going to the playoffs. Like, you're going to go to the playoffs. What can you do when you get there? And there was potential of adding a defensive end or a pass rusher that could maybe help you out. That didn't happen today. And I don't know the specific reason. Maybe the Giants weren't going to play ball. Maybe you weren't offering what they were asking. Maybe you didn't even try for it. Maybe you saw three sacks and said, I think we got a handle on this. Let's rock and roll. Maybe you look at yourself and say, we've got guys coming off injuries that's going to help out the defense. Braylon Trice won't help us this year, but next year he's going to jump right into the lineup and be ready to roll. Yeah, I don't know. And then there's the aspect of we don't want to part with the assets because we want to keep our window open, and it's not win now at all costs. Is it win now? Sure. Is it win now at all costs? No. It's pot limit. It's not no limit. They're playing pot limit. There's only a maximum amount they can bet right now. And so we'll see if Terry Fontenot speaks and what comes out of it, but frustrating. I'm trying to reason and understand why they didn't make the move, but it's not going to kill the frustration. I wanted them to make a move. I wanted them to go after it. I especially wanted them to go after it when you see Za'Darius Smith from the Browns go to the Lions, when you see Marshawn Lattimore from the Saints go to the Commanders, the two teams that you're supposed to be in conversation with as contenders, they added pieces. They addressed issues. They filled holes. And the Atlanta Falcons just sat there. And again, maybe it was on the table. Maybe it never was. We'll probably never know. But that doesn't change how frustrating today has been for Falcons fans who maybe woke up and it may look, maybe we were on the wrong side of optimistic. I feel like I was now that nothing happened. I thought for sure they were adding something. I thought for sure they would part with draft picks and do what it takes to improve this team in a season that feels like it could be special. Maybe I'm the fool for being optimistic. Again, It all comes back to one thing. I'm not going to be any less frustrated about it. They have their operating procedure, and that's fine. They don't want to go all in at all costs. I understand that. And again, I tied today back to what we saw with the NFL draft. And maybe I'm spot on here. But when you have Kirk Cousins and then you draft Michael Penix, it tells me you're not going all in on a two-year window. And that's fine. What does it say? You're extending the window. You don't want it to just be 2 years. You want your three, your four, your five, your six, your seven. You want that whole run of Penix to be a window, right? So you're not just in on a two-year window. I don't really think today was a different discussion. It's the same thing. Trading for someone and giving up assets means you're shortening your window because you're not going to have the pieces to bring in more talent and keep that window open. Again, not how I would have done it, but that might be their operating procedure and their mindset.
I think what's frustrating, if you're a fan of this team, is because it does seem like there's a bit of kind of like middling. Like
they're trying
like
to play both sides.
Yeah.
There's no doubt they're trying to both win now and extend a winning window. And the concern is, what happens if you both don't win now and then also don't keep a winning window on the other side?
Exactly.
Now, the other flip side is you might win a Super Bowl and have a winning window after that Super Bowl. Now, I don't know.
Right.
Again, I said this before, too, and then we'll move on. Just because you didn't add something today doesn't mean you cannot win the Super Bowl. I understand the discussion. How are they going to win the Super Bowl when they ain't got no pass rush? I get it. If an offense can get hot in the playoffs, maybe this is all I'm counting on, the defense can get hot, too. They had three sacks last week. Maybe they figured a couple of things out that they could take moving forward. They're going to get some guys back healthy. I don't know. I was joking. They're just saving Brandon Dorlus for a playoff run. Like, I don't know. I don't have a good answer. But I know that just because they didn't bring in someone, doesn't rule them out. Cross them off the list. It doesn't work like that. There have been, I always forget what Super Bowl we're on. I don't really care. 57 Super Bowl winners. That seems like it's more than that, but we'll just go with that number.
It's close.
58 Super Bowl winners. Did they all pick up someone at the trade deadline? No. It's happened before. And so we'll see what happens. Real quick, I want to get this Jason Kelce story in. He slams the phone of an unruly fan after disparaging comments about his brother, Travis, and his relationship with Taylor Swift. He then went to apologize as part of his shtick on ESPN for Monday night. I don't know. Like, am I wrong for saying, like, you shouldn't apologize? I guess to keep up.
Yeah,
it probably wasn't his choice. I'm sure ESPN was like, hey, man, can you just, like, say you're sorry?
Yeah,
like,
just more so because of the action and the words that were used. But, like, I didn't have an issue with anything that he did.
A couple of things. First off, I don't understand the disparaging comments. Like, whether or not you think Taylor Swift is attractive, that everyone else can have their own opinions. But, like, I'm pretty sure the word used to describe Travis Kelce in that instance, like, it's the exact opposite of dating Taylor Swift. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's not about making sense. It's about getting that moment. It's about getting the rise out of you.
I guess. He lost his phone, so...
Worth it, though, I guess, probably to him.
Is it, though?
Unfortunately, to people like that, yes, it is.
I'll tell you why it's not. In today's day and age, people know who that is now. People know whose phone that was. That guy, it's going to cost him a job down the road. There are going to be factors that follow him for the wrong reasons off of this.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't just a Jason Kelce thing. He's not the one that looks bad in this instance.
I agree 1,000%.
The unruly fan, if that's what we're going to call him, is the one who's going to ultimately come out the loser. This isn't, I think I'm allowed to say this on radio, I don't know. This isn't a Hawk Tua situation
right.
where Haley Welch has gone on and has really settled into like a nice lane for her. A funny and interesting podcast. Some might not think so, but the viewers and whatever and appearances on other podcasts and all, like, this ain't going to become that. And I think that's part of the problem. Everyone thinks they're going to get their 15 minutes of fame and it's going to turn you into a millionaire. Most 15 minutes of fame end you up in jail or unemployed, yep, or something like that. And this is going to cost them. All right. Anyways, I'm out of time. I got to get out of here because Jason Longshore deserves his time. Atlanta soccer tonight. They have got a lot to talk about. Atlanta United, local high school, college, everything that's going on as well. So I'm going to head out and let Jason Longshore take over from here. I want to thank Dom Cherosky for his work today. I am Abe Gordon. Appreciate it. Back with the Midday Show tomorrow right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.